Following is an unrehearsed interview with Mrs. Shirley Dunn of Lincoln County, Kentucky, by Libby Frost with the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview took place in the Harvey Helm Historical Library in Stanford on June 27, 1978, at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we're sitting in the Harvey Helm Historical Library, is that correct? Could you tell me a little bit about how it developed?
The library itself was started by the Woman's Club, and they were organized in 1914, and one of their first projects was the library, and the first librarian was Miss Mattie Paxton. I think you've interviewed Miss Morrow, and she was an aunt of Miss Morrow. Later on, Miss Marion Grimes was librarian, and she served from 1937 to 1959 until her death, and all of these ladies served without a salary. Then in 1938 to 41, Lincoln County received a WPA grant or a paid librarian, but Miss Brown still worked under her. From 1914 until 53, the library was housed on the third floor of the courthouse. But at that time, we received a bookmobile, and we couldn't carry those books up and down those steps, so they moved us to the basement of the courthouse. Then in 1965, Mrs. Harvey Helm left the home that we're sitting in to the people of Lincoln County for a library in her will, with the provision that we pass a tax to maintain it. We voted on that tax and failed, and we had to vote the second year before we passed it.
This was a countywide referendum?
Mm-hmm. And that's the way we're operating today. She also asked us to give the library the name of her husband, who had been a United States representative.
This was from Harvey Helm?
Yes. He served from the 6th District about 1916. I have a photograph that was made in 1916. We soon outgrew this library because the state gave us demonstration and brought a lot of books in. And Mrs. Helm had said we could expand, but we could not change the front of the building. Well, the bank wouldn't lend us money on that basis. So we had to buy a new lot and build from scratch. But to keep this library, it had to be kept as a library or it would go back to the heirs. So we've made it a branch library, a small historic library, genealogical library, and then in the other rooms we've added the museum. So that's where we stand today.
What about the history of this house? How did it come into Mrs. Helms' possession?
Well, she bought it from a family by the name of Rout, but in the very beginning, this house was owned by the sister of Benjamin Logan. She was Mary Logan Briggs. Benjamin Logan, of course, was the one that built the fort and established the town of Stanford. And she gave it to the Presbyterians for a church. That's about 1788
when she gave it
when
to the church?
Used it as a church. Well, they outgrew it, and then Benjamin Logan gave land up where the Buffalo Springs Cemetery is now, and they built the church there, and they operated from there for several years, and then they built a new building down on Main Street where they're operating today. It's Presbyterian Church. But the house itself is historical in the fact that we think of it in connection with the whole Logan family. Mm-hmm.
So you would date part of this house at least back to the beginning of Stanford?
Or? Yes, this room and the hall are log. And they are the actual home of Mary Briggs. And then after they moved the church, I haven't traced it through the courts to know how many people did own it, but the rebuilding was done after Mary Briggs' time, mm-hmm. but before Mrs. Helm purchased it.
Have you seen the original logs? Are they hidden in the
Yes, you structure? Can see them in the basement. And you can tell from the depth of the door ways that it is log, made of log. And the depth of the windows too, you see they're thick enough that you're sure they're log.
What would you say is the most unusual item you have in the museum? You may have several. What are some of them?
Well, I expect the most unusual and the most expensive item that we have is a Kentucky long rifle. Now, we are tax supported. The library is tax supported. So we do not use tax money to buy items for the museum. And you don't always get a lot of things given. People have a lot of nice antiques here, but they don't want to part with them. But we have a small fund that was given to us in memory of a man that grew up here, Harry Farmer. Lived in Lexington.
But he grew up in this home?
In his home, but
Stanford.
In his town. Mm-hmm. And at his death, the family requested that contributions be sent to the museum rather than flowers. And so we use that memorial fund for the items that we buy rather than using tax money for it. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you've purchased besides
well,
a rifle?
That rifle was one. We have purchased a Seth Thomas clock that runs. And we have an old lard press that was used back in early 1900s. We bought an old dentist chair. And there's some small items. We have a large axe. We have what is called a lap bench. It's made of metal. And it was where a person working with a hammer on metals could sit comfortably and place the little bench on his knees and pound on that rather than on the knees.
Mm-hmm. Like a tinsmith or?
No, it would be, it could be
silversmith,
but something of that order. It could be something heavier too. And we have some old shoe lasts that we bought with this fund. And I should have made a list of these, but I didn't do it.
Let's back up a minute. This lard press, could you, we don't make lard like that anymore. Could you tell me how lard was made?
Well, yes, I can, because I've made it many times. I'm that old. When we would butcher the hogs in the fall, the fat was cut from the lean part of the meat, and the hams and shoulders would be cured. And this fat was cut in small pieces and cooked, and then placed in the lard press to press the lard, press the grease out of the skin. And what was left was called cracklings. That made off a good cornbread too.
What did you grind it up then for cornbread, or?
No, it usually was small enough pieces. Mm-hmm. Because if you cut the fat pieces in small pieces, they cooked faster. So we cut it up pretty fine. Mm.
There's also an unusual sheep shear, what looks unusual to me, upstairs. Could you tell me a little bit about how sheep was sheared with this machine?
Well, yes. That was before the times when they had electricity in the barns and could use an electric clipper. But it's a machine that stands on three legs, and the power is furnished by a crank. And it took two people to shear the sheep. One person had to operate the machine, and the other man ran the clippers over the sheep to get the wool off. Mm-hmm.
The dentist chair that you have in one room, where did you find that?
We bought that in Lexington. I don't know who ever owned it. We didn't know. But it is a very, very old one. And we found it in an antique shop. Mm-hmm. And it was purchased with this same farmer fund.
There's been a great interest in antiques lately. How do you go about finding good bargains?
Well, we visit sales a lot. We have a large dinner bell that was used, a farm bell, to call them in for their meals, that we found out in the country at an auction. And it's been placed here in front of the building here. And one of the men on the library board has an antique shop, and he's on the lookout for things like that for us. This old bell cost us $140. Mm-hmm. Pretty high.
You have a round stone item in the hallway. Could you tell me about that?
Yes. That came from the farm owned by Smith T. Powell. Now, Mr. Powell was killed in a tractor accident last year. But I visited his farm a few years ago in writing up the story of his home, which was a home of one of our revolutionary soldiers. And he showed me the wheel, and it's unusual looking, and he felt sure that it is a cartwheel rather than a mill wheel. But it's about the size of a mill wheel. But it has a date on it, and the date is September the 30th, 1789, and we feel sure that it carried a family over Cumberland Gap in a cart coming to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Where is Smith? Is Smith Powell's farm?
It's out on Peyton Wells Road. In fact, it's called the Peyton Wells Farm, And the revolutionary soldier that I mentioned was Valentine Peyton, and his very famous sulfur well right there on the bank of the Hanging Fork Creek that runs through this farm.
What do you mean by a sulfur well?
It's tastes like sulfur. And a lot of people back in those early days used the sulfur water, and many of the waters from the wells here for medicinal purposes. And there's many different wells besides sulfur in Lincoln County.
What makes you think that this wheel it was used as a cartwheel?
Well, the way the wheel is shaped, usually the old mill wheels would be perfectly flat on both sides. And one side of this wheel is rounded rather than flat on both sides. And of course it is supposition that it was a cartwheel, but Mr. Powell thought it was. Mm-hmm.
Has there ever been any historical research into using the stone wheels and the carts?
No.
Most of us think, you know, the covered wagon was...
No, we have not. Mm-hmm. But thinking that it was a cartwheel rather than a mill wheel, we know of no mill that was in that exact vicinity in the early days. Now, there were many mills on Hanging Fork Creek and on Dix River, but none in that vicinity that we ever heard of. It is another reason why we think it is a cartwheel instead of a mill wheel.
Mm-hmm. You have an old newspaper displayed in one of your shelves. Could you tell me about that?
Yes, that is a Pennsylvania newspaper, and it was given to this museum by John Fisher. He is brother of Lee Davis Fisher. They were both raised in this county. And I corresponded with Mrs. Fisher, and she told me about having the paper, and when I wrote her, I complimented her on it and didn't even hint that I thought we might have it. But later she wrote me and said they felt like it should be in this museum, and she was going to send it to me. And a few weeks later I had another letter from her, and she said we decided that the newspaper is too valuable to send through the mail, and I'm going to bring it to you. And they did. They had two teenage sons, and they took them out of school, brought me the newspaper, and spent most of the day in this museum, and they thoroughly enjoyed it. The newspaper is dated
in 1787,
and the reason that it is so much value to us, it does have an article in the newspaper written by Benjamin Logan.
Do you recall what the article dealt
with?
Yes,
it's about, in fact, it was a letter to the Indians, and he was scolding them for their treatment of the white people.
An open letter to the Indians?
Mm-hmm.
This was published where, the newspaper?
Well, it had to be in Pennsylvania, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I should have looked that up before we started talking. But the name of the newspaper is Pennsylvania Bulletin, or whatever you get it.
Okay.
Yeah, and maybe back to Pennsylvania, too, on a good many trips, and it could have been done on one of his trips back there after he had even started the fourth year. Mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania Journal, published in Philadelphia. Could you tell me a little bit about the items that you'd like to have for the museum, items that you're looking for that you have not yet obtained?
Well, of course, we don't have a lot of room here for a lot of furniture, but there are many antiques in the county that would be acceptable, and in fact, we would really like to have. In fact, I had seen a set of brass sleigh bells that I would love to have, but I've not been able to find a set that is for sale. Mm. I've seen two different sets that are just beautiful, but they will not part mm-hmm. with them. And there's a lot of valuable things in the county. Mr. Ben Gaines, who owns the Pence Gaines Furniture Store down here, has an old pistol that was owned by one of the Bridgewater boys who led the gang after the Civil War. And one of the boys was killed in the St. Asaph Hotel, which was the building that houses the Pence Gaines Furniture Company now. And that would be valuable to have here too. We don't mm-hmm. have.
Why sleigh bells? Why your special interest in the sleigh bells?
Well, because in the early days, the way they traveled was by sleigh. And when these bells were made, they probably were made by hand. And a handmade brass bell is really valuable. Mm-hmm. Something to be proud of if you could find them.
How long have you been a resident of Stanford?
Since 1942.
Where?
My husband's job brought us to Lincoln County, but we both grew up in Grant County. We moved here from Corbin. We lived in Corbin about 2 years on the job, and then the job changed. He was a railway postal clerk, and this was the end of the line at that time. So it was practical for us to move here. And after he retired, we own our home and like it here and stay. Mm-hmm. None of my family is here, though. The children are all away.
Why have you taken such a special interest in Lincoln County history? What's unique about Lincoln County?
Well, it was one of the first counties, one of three counties, would make it of interest. And when I came here, I was invited to belong to the Historical Society. And they talked a lot about Lincoln County, and I would ask them, where could I find that information? Where are there books on it? And they said, there are none. And I realized that Lincoln County was losing history because of that fact. And I started collecting newspaper items that people in the Historical Society had written that I felt were fine historians. And just for my own benefit and for my DAR chapter here, just collecting the history, and it just grew. It's kind of like toxic, mm-hmm. and it grows.
How many books have you written about Lincoln County? What are their titles?
Well, this book, the first book that I didn't actually write much of it. As I say, it was a collection of articles that had been written by historians. And then I copied everything pertaining to Lincoln County from Collins' history. And when I started it, they had not recopied Collins. So they are available today, but you could not buy one then. I've lost my train of thought.
That number of books.
Oh, yes. And that one is called Early History of Lincoln County, and it is written by a good many historians. And then I became interested in the old homes of the county, and for my same DAR to make a program for it at one time, I started writing stories of some of these old homes and taking photographs of them. And friends encouraged me to have that printed too, and I did. And then the third one, my husband and I together have copied the inscriptions from every cemetery in the county that we have been able to find. And and I have copied the marriage records from the courthouse and indexed the brides. And a lady from St. Louis was working in the courthouse one day, and she asked me questions about it, and I told her they'd been copied but hadn't been published. And after she went home, she wrote and asked me, said she would like to publish them. And so that's the only one that has actually been published. The others have been printed, and I sold them.
How did you go about getting this information, for example, the marriage records?
Well, I do quite a lot of research in the courthouse. People write here for copies of these old records, and the clerks do not have time to do it. And they turn these requests over to me, so I am very familiar with the records there, and I copy records for people all over the United States. And I realized that from most any courthouse that you would visit, if you didn't know who Aunt Mary married, her last name, you couldn't find her marriage record. And I just decided it would be a good idea to index the brides.
Mm-hmm.
And I have access to the courthouse. They don't object to me working there. And so that's how I come to do those marriage records. Anybody can go there and find the marriage record. But as I say, if you don't know the bride's name, you can't find it by that record.
Mm-hmm.
So those have been published by a lady in St. Louis.
What period of time did you look at the bride's names?
These records are from 1780 to 1850. And Mrs. Griffith felt like it would make the book too bulky to do them after 1850. But I have them indexed here in this library and at home to 1900. Mm-hmm. And now Mrs. Griffith wants to do another book on the 1850 census of Lincoln County and brides from 1850 to 1900. We'll probably do that in the fall.